Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 21 and a half. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and joining me today is one of our community members, Retro Darren. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good to be here.
So I take it Darren's your actual name then, Retro Darren?
My name is not Retro Darren, it's Darren, yeah. So I added the retro in because there was already a Darren on the forum, so you can't have two Darrens, can you?
I think we've actually got three Darrens, actually, on the forum. I think, yeah, we got a total of three, so the forum is populated by Darrens, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so before we find out a little bit about you and how you got into gaming and so on, what I want to find out, how on earth did you come across our little site?
Well, since sort of podcasting become sort of popular, mm-hmm. I was always on the lookout for, different podcasts. You know, you go on iTunes and you go to the iTunes store, straight on the podcast, type in a subject that interests you. And, of course, retro gaming was one of them. Yeah. So started getting into Retro Gaming Radio, Shane R. Monroe, you know that?
Yeah, that one.
Started listening to that, and it was good to actually hear, reviews and things about Commodore 64 games, which is basically what he talked about a lot. Yeah. And, because I had a Commodore 64, so, really happy to hear about all that again. Like, I remember that game, So I started listening to them a lot. Mm-hmm. And then there was Retro Gaming Roundup, it was sort of an offshoot of that.
Yeah.
And that had an English guy on it, so I thought, oh, great, he's going to start talking about the Spectrum and stuff, because, the Americans it wasn't really big over there, was it?
That's right, yeah.
And, even though there's an English guy on Retro Gaming Roundup, he's still not very Spectrum friendly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, looking around for more podcasts, you find the odd one here and there, but then I found that one, your one, and, got into it and joined the forums, and here I am.
Absolutely fantastic. I'm always curious to find out how, our community members actually find us. I mean, some people tend to find us via YouTube through my 8-Bit Wars and other series, but I'm kind of glad that you mentioned a lot of American podcasts don't really mention the Spectrum, because I think by mentioning the Spectrum and a load of the system actually gives us a little bit of our more of a British feel.
Yeah, like I say, it's and basically references to things that were big in America. I mean, you'll hear things mentioned Chuck E. Cheese, and I went down Chuck E. Cheese and I played this arcade game, and I think, never heard of Chuck E. Cheese. Well, I have heard of it, but you never experienced that back in the day, and it's nice to hear sort of that when you was talking once about, down the local chip shop, they had a Mr. Doom machine, or, they had in the swimming bars, they had a Double Dragon. You think, you did have arcade games there, didn't you? That's sort of more familiar to me, so I got into that, this podcast through that sort of familiarity,
So you've told us a little bit about how you found us. So why don't you tell us a little bit then how you first got into gaming then?
Well, I hope you're going to rewind a long, long time ago when I first started. Would have been sort of the late 70s,
Right, okay, wow.
And that would have been in our, going on holiday to a caravan site or down the coast or whatever, Mm-hmm. And there'd always be an arcade there, and being about in the late 1979 maybe, I would have been about 8 years old or something.
Right, yeah.
And there would be a Space Invaders machine, which sort of fascinated me, Before that, it'd all be sort of those 2p machines where they push the pennies over,
Yeah.
They're always that sort of thing, or whack-a-mole and all this sort of thing. But then the Space Invaders machine was there, so I was well impressed with that. Couldn't get near it because I think it was the only one around on that campsite at the time, and it was all the older kids playing it, but I finally got a game of it, and that was it. I was hooked. And then next year I came back on, it would have been about 1980.
Yeah.
Then the same place, and they had loads of arcade machines, and they had the Pac-Man, the first time I ever saw Pac-Man.
Right, all and, the classics.
Oh, big time. And I remember to this day what was there. It was a Pac-Man, it was a Space Invaders, it was a game called Lunar Rescue, which is not Lunar Lander, but it's Lunar Rescue. A lot of people get confused when I say that. And Galaxian.
Fantastic.
And I must have spent a fortune. Absolute pain in the ass for my parents, I think, asking for 10p's all the time. And that was it. So as soon as I got back off holiday, I'm bang into it. I really need to, get some sort of retro game in my house. And of course, at the time around was the Atari 2600, and that's where I sort
classic
of began.
Machine. Absolute classic. So how did you manage to convince your parents to get you this machine then?
A lot of whining, I think. before that, they sort of met me halfway and they bought me one of them Pong machines, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was a, I remember it was the Ingersoll. I bought it back on eBay. I found it again. It was an Ingersoll Pong machine, basically. You had the, you know, squash and it was football, which was basically, you had more
bats. I think the one that I might have had, Darren, because the one I had, you could alternate between the games you had. I think you had hockey, squash, football, and it was just a different variation of the same Pong-type game.
But yeah.
I can never remember the name of it. You might have to put up a little thing on the forum about that, so that way to just double-check if it is the right one that I used to have.
Oh, yeah, I definitely remember it. Like I said, I bought it back again, and I forgot it had a light gun with it, which I've got again. And there was like a target shooting game with it, and you had like a gun, like the Nintendo thing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was pretty cool for back then. I mean, it was quite primitive, but, you know, I was really impressed with that. Mm-hmm. But, of course, yeah, I couldn't afford to get an Atari 2600, and that was my main sort of thing that I really wanted to get, and this is sort of the early 80s, you know, and they were quite expensive still, quite current. So I was in the Cubs back then, you know, the Cub Scouts and that.
Yeah.
As a little kid. And one of the guys there, he turned around and said, oh, my brother's got... it's an Atari console and blah, blah, he's got Space Invaders. And I was like, you know, instantly my best friend then, you know. So I'm sort of trying to get round his house to see this thing. And went round there and his brothers won it in a competition.
Right? Really?
Yeah. Wow. Not into
what
it.
What hell of a prize.
Oh, big time. It was about 200 quid back then.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of money back then, you know. So he's won this Atari 2600 and he's got Space Invaders on it. So I'm like amazed that it's like an arcade sitting in that guy's bedroom, basically, just me. And I'm having a go of it. I'm thinking, this is brilliant. This is brilliant. Then he pulled out another. He's got Defender on it. And I was just, wow, my God, Defender, one of my favourite arcade games ever. And he's got it sitting there in his hand. And then he turns around to me and says, do you want to buy this? Because I'm not into it. I just won it. And I thought,
really?
Well, yeah, of course I want to buy it. How much do you want for it? And he said, oh, I don't know, 100 quid. He's so not into it. He just didn't want it, you know what I mean? So I'm raced back to my house and I'm... Mom, this guy's selling this Atari 2600, you know, 100 quid. Finally, after a lot of whinging and whining, finally got my mum to stump up some money for it. I think we managed to get it for 75 quid in the end. And that
so did you end up getting it that same day or, you know, maybe
no, down the line? It was about a week later or something.
Yeah.
Just to shut me up, I think it was.
I bet you that must have been the longest week ever, just for you waiting to get your Atari 2600 machine.
Well, first it was no, then it was maybe. and you know, just keep plugging away. Finally got it. We got it for £75, which was, at the time, they were selling in the shops for 200 quid. And this was brand new, you know, used a couple, you know, only a few times.
Yeah.
And got it home, and that was it, mate. You know, my house was the go-to place.
So what was the first game that you put into that Atari 2600 out of the ones that you mentioned there before?
Well, there was the Space Invaders as well. Of course, you got Combat, which was like the pack-in game for it, wasn't it? You know? Mm-hmm. So Combat... it probably was Combat because I had one of my friends around, two joysticks, two-player game. Yeah. Of course, you're just going to compete, aren't you? You're just going to go for it. And I still, to this day, love Combat. The competitive edge on that game, the jet aeroplanes, the tanks, the rebound tanks where you fire your bullets and they sort of bounce off of the walls and things like that.
Yeah.
Still love it, you know. But having Defender and Space Invaders and Combat, they were my three games that I had.
So how did you find Defender and Space Invaders compared to the arcade machines? Did you notice the graphical differences? Did you notice they weren't quite as good?
I thought Space Invaders was pretty good, considering, you know. And the actual Space Invaders themselves were different, quite a different design, probably for copyright reasons or whatever. And Defender was all right, but I had Defender in my house, so I was quite happy with that. But, of course... Defender, I don't know if you remember the arcade machine, the Defender, it had about 50 buttons on it, you know. You know, hyperspace, reversed, you know, blah, 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 blah. And to get all that down into one joystick and one button, I thought was quite an achievement, you know.
No, definitely. That used to be one of my favourite games ever, actually, on my 2600. So where did you end up going there, game-wise, from the 2600, then?
What, games for the 2600? What?
Or console-wise?
Well... basically, because I had the 2600, that Christmas I got, that was on my Christmas list, these 2600 games, you know.
Right, so, alright, why don't you tell us the games then you got for Christmas, and I've got to find out what the must-have Christmas games.
Well, it was about 1982, so E.T.
Oh,
Now, a lot of people slag that off, and it's easy to jump on that bandwagon to say that game was rubbish, but mm-hmm. I don't think it was that bad. You look around at that time, what other games were available for the 2600, and it, yeah. you compare like for like, and it wasn't that bad.
Do you think that's what it was? People just saw the big blockbuster movie that had special effects, amazing everything, and then to play a somewhat simple, basic game is what... So it was overhyped. Do you reckon that was the problem with VT?
Yeah, I don't know what people were expecting, really. I didn't expect anything. I just saw the game, you know, well, on Christmas morning, that game came out. I was, like, well impressed with it.
Yeah.
And it was a bit, looking back on it, it's a bit clunky. It's a bit sort of slow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people expected some really sort of fast arcadey sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was an all right game, you know. And all the reviews that have been done about it, I think, are a bit unjustified, you know.
No, I completely, totally agree with you. Because, I mean, how else could you have made an E.T. game back in the day? You couldn't make it like a Defender clone. You couldn't have made it like Space Invaders because it was E.T. after all, you know?
Yeah, and they've managed to sort of compact that story into that one game.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a lot of memory to work with, obviously, because the early days and all that. And yeah. I've listened to an interview by the guy who made it. I can't remember his name now, but the interview's online, you know, if you look for it.
Yeah.
And he was saying he had like a deadline, you know, he had like a few weeks to sort all this out, and I thought it was quite an achievement. It wasn't that bad a game. So I got that. I got Berserk, which is probably my all-time favourite 2600 game, playability. Okay,
so why is this one of your favourite 2600 games than ever then?
Because I don't know if you've seen the arcade version of Berserk. It's on MAME, anyway. Mm-hmm. And other graphics are a bit sort of blockier. It's... still pretty arcade perfect, you know, on the Atari 2600. And it was just a really fun game, and it's the game I still, if I've got a handheld emulator, you know, a GPTX, that's on there, and that if I've got the Atari games on there, I always play Berserk, and I will quite happily play that for half an hour at a time, you know.
It's just got that sort of, like, let's try one more go factor to it, I suppose.
Well, it's just fun to play, you know. There's no sort of goal to get to, apart from just shooting everybody, you see, you know. But it's just a fun game, you know, and I still play that now.
Hello, everybody. This is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
All right then, so we'll move on to your next computer or console. Where did you go after the 2600?
2600, and it was early 80s. I think it was about 1983. I saw a Spectrum for the first time.
Right, okay. First impressions?
First impressions weren't that great because a mate of mine got Spectrum. His dad was a teacher,
mm-hmm.
and he had a BBC Micro, which all teachers and, you know, it was a school computer, really, wasn't it?
Yeah,
this BBC Micro, he used to go around and play that. And then his dad turned around and said, I've got the Spectrum. Like, what do you think of this? And we loaded up a game, and he had a game called Centipede by DK Tronics.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it and thought, well, this is much better than the Atari 2600 one. It was quite a basic sort of game. So we're playing around on it, and I thought, yeah, it was all right, you know. So didn't see him for a little while. And then another mate of mine said, he's got Spectrum. So I said, oh, yeah, I've seen one of them. They're all right, you know, nothing special. Went around and he's got Jetpack and Trans Am, and that sort of blew my mind, you know. I thought, wow, this is like a step up, you know, this is the next step. And of course I wanted to get one then, you know, that's it. So again, working on the parents, you know, it's good for education, you know, what all kids say, it's good for my homework and all the rest of it. And they said, well, if you sell your 2600, we'll sort of meet you halfway, sort of thing. So sold the 2600, and by that time, you know, this is like a year on, I probably had about 20 cartridges for the 2600. Wow. I think I sold the whole lot for about 100 quid.
Right, okay. Well, I suppose it's not bad considering you did get it as, you know, for pretty cheap.
Yeah, I mean, arguably, I could argue that, you know, you've made a profit there, you know, but not really, considering all the games I had to buy.
Yeah, that's true. So what were the games then that you had for the Speccy then?
Oh, right, Spectrum. Of course, there was... You turn up to school, you got your Spectrum. You turn up to school the next day. I've got Spectrum. Can you do me a tape? to your mates. So I remember I got a compilation tape that one of my mates gave me, and it had Death Chase, and a 3D Death Chase.
Yeah.
Which was the game of the moment back then. Yeah. Ant Attack. which was incidentally first ever game I completed completely.
Really? I can get far in that game. Wow, that's really impressive.
Well,
really
impressive. Once you get used to the controls, because it wasn't like left, right, up and down, it was like you can rotate the guy and then walk forward, and then you rotate him and walk forward. Once you get used to that, and a bit of perseverance, you can do it. It's not that difficult, but I was well proud of myself when I completed that. Can't wait to tell everyone. And then there was like all the ultimate games were big at the time, so there was Cookie and Jetpack and Lunar Jetman, Attic Attack, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. And The Hobbit as well, which was probably the first adventure game I ever played.
Right, okay. So how did you find that? Because I mean, I remember playing games like that, but I'd always end up typing in swear words. Was that just me, or did you happen to do that as well?
I think everybody did that, didn't they? As I remember, The Hobbit, if you typed in whatever, a swear word, it was how they don't understand. But some games got smart, and they obviously knew that kids were typing in swear words, and there was an automatic game called Groucho.
Yeah.
If you know about that. Typing a swear word on that, and Pyromania as well.
Yeah.
It would reset the machine and say, we don't like swearing, blah, 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 and, it'd reset. And some would make a comment about the word you've said, So, of course, every adventure I'm probably would still do it now. When looking at adventures, you type in whatever and just see what they say about it, It was always quite a thing to do. But, yeah, The Hobbit was the first adventure game. At the time, I think most adventure games were quite sort of Dungeons and Dragons, like, goblins and castles and things. But I remember there was a game called Mad Martha.
No, I don't know that one.
It was quite an early sort of microgen game.
Yeah.
And that was the first game I remember where it was like an adventure, but it was set sort of like a normal sort of environment,
Yeah.
And you had to go out on the town and get drunk without your wife, like moaning at you, I think, or something like that. So I quite got there. There was another game called Urban Upstart. Did you ever play that?
No, I haven't actually. But I was going to ask you, did you ever play a game called The Quill, which was basically an adventure game maker, basically?
I remember it, and I think I bought it, actually, and I couldn't get on with it because I was a sort of purely game player, and then
you
think where you had to sort of do any programming, I wasn't interested. So I think I swapped it for Valhalla, a game called Valhalla.
Right.
Which was another adventure game.
So I take it then, by the sounds of it, then you were pretty much into your adventure games then on the ZX Spectrum then.
Well, no, it sounds like it, but I wasn't because they were, like I say, they were a bit sort of slow, and you had to have a bit of patience. And being the sort of 12, 13-year-old kid, I had no patience at all.
Yeah.
So it was purely arcade games, and those sort of that sort of genre arcade adventures came out about that sort of time, sort of Pyjama-rama. Did you ever play that? There was and that was sort of an arcade game where you had to solve puzzles along the way, like much like Dizzy, which I know you and all that sort of thing.
It's like a predecessor, basically.
Yeah,
that sort of like game sort of invented that sort of style thing.
Yeah,
that and Nighttime and all those other sort of games came before Dizzy, pretty much.
Yeah, so that was the sort of midway between being like in adventure games and arcade games was them arcade adventures. I quite got into that sort of genre.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into Retro Asylum Podcast.
Okay, so after the Spectrum then, where did you go gaming-wise from there?
Well, after the Spectrum, the natural progression to that was the Commodore 64. But of course, there was a great rivalry, and probably still is. Are you a Spectrum user or a Commodore user? And, it's quite split in the school playground.
Yeah.
Are you one or the other? So I have to admit, I was a bit of a turncoat, and I sold it
to the C64.
I did.
So what was it that made you actually go for the C64 then? Was it the SID chip, the full colour graphics?
It was, there was a video shop down the bottom of my road.
Right.
So you used to bowl down there, and they started hiring out Spectrum games.
Right.
So I used to hang around in there because the guy who ran the video shop was well into his Spectrum as well.
Yeah.
So he had loads of Spectrum games, and he said, oh, you want to try this? This is good. And, obviously looking back, he was just trying to get money out of me. Hire this one. But Yeah, so you get to know him, and all the sort of kids around our way, we used to go down there and play these games. He used to let you play them before you hired them, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So one day I turned up, and he's got a Commodore 64 there, and he had a game called Aztec Challenge on there.
Yeah, that rings a bell, Aztec Challenge.
Well, it's not that graphically wonderful, but it was the SID chip in full, you know, full effects, and it was really, the music for Aztec Challenge is just, like, fantastic, and still is now. Really atmospheric, and he had the sound cranked right up on the TV, and I was just blown away by the sound, and of course, the game as well was, it's a pretty good game, but sort of twitch game. It was quite a reflex sort of game, you know. It wasn't the sort of the game you could just chill out and play. It was, you really had to be intense playing it. So we're playing that, and then you got another one here, Forbidden Forest. And
oh wow!
The music to that, which you've probably heard anyway, that cranked up. And when you're used to a Spectrum, listening to beeps and back then,
it's a completely different world, isn't it?
Well, back then the Spectrum music side of it hadn't evolved that much, so it was.
Yeah, I don't think it had really gone into the AY chip from there. It was still the beeper, pretty much.
It was big time.
The 128K had come out.
And I remember, like, Manic Miner was about the best music I heard back then on Spectrum. You know.
Yeah.
That sort of Hall of the Mountain King sort of thing.
So what was your view and opinion then of people that had the ZX Spectrum then? Were you one of these guys that used to make fun of kids like me for having a ZX Spectrum?
No, I didn't, because I was one of them, of course, you know. Spectrum, I still, to this day, I still love the Spectrum. But of course, there was, when a game like came out for both systems, like Bruce Lee, for instance.
Yeah.
They're quite... The same game, obviously, the same, exactly the same levels and all the rest of it, but quite distinctly different playability-wise.
Yeah.
So, mate of mine got Bruce Lee on the Spectrum. I got it on the Commodore 64, and we're going, "Oh, that's rubbish! That you can't do that on my one." And you know, there was a bit of banter. All it was banter, really. I don't think there was any sort of great rivalry. You know, it was just like just kids, you know, arguing about petty.
Well, look. That was the whole one of the reasons why I started my video series on YouTube, the 8-Bit Wars, because when I was back at school, it was the ZX Spectrum versus the C64 and also versus the Amstrad. I've got to admit, the majority of the kids had C64 and, you know, Spectrum, and it was just a few kids that had the Amstrad, so I think they got it the worst, really.
To be honest, I didn't know anybody who had an Amstrad.
Really? Wow.
At all.
Okay.
Maybe it's just where I live. I think... It's to do with the circle of friends you've got, or the culture of people in one area, because it sort of spreads, doesn't it? If everyone's got Spectrums, then you're likely to get one. If everyone's got Commodore 64, you're likely to get one. If everyone's got Amstrads, then you're likely to be interested and try and get one yourself. I don't recall anyone ever in an Amstrad. Or if they did, they probably kept quiet about it, you know?
Yeah, well, they probably did have an Amstrad, but they had the green monitor, and that was nothing to sing, you know, to sing about, basically.
Well, it had a monitor with it. I mean, that was quite a bold move, wasn't it, really, when you think about it? Monitors were quite expensive.
But the green monitor, why, oh, why? I know it was cheaper, but still,
well, it was that
horrible.
It was Alan Sugar, wasn't it? You know, I think he's a bit overrated business-wise. I don't think he's... Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that was the Commodore 64. There was brilliant games for it. Still, looking back, probably my best system I've had. Still, if I go on emulators, I always fire up the Commodore 64 emulator.
Yeah, I mean, I still find myself playing it on my PSP from time to time. So after the C64 then, Darren, where did you end up going console-wise?
The next step up was the Amiga for me.
Ah, okay, yeah, seems to be a popular choice. Scopey mentioned the Amiga on this last podcast. So what made you get the Amiga then?
Well, it's exactly the same story as all the rest of it. Popping around a mate's house one day, and he's got an Amiga.
Yeah.
And he had... the Three Stooges by CinemaWare, I remember that.
Yeah.
And he had Star Wars, the arcade game, you know, the Death Star one.
Yeah.
And he had Test Drive.
Right, okay, that's a classic, actually, yeah.
So, firstly, he had the Three Stooges on, and if you compare, for the time, it was probably sort of 88, 1988, so they were fairly unusual to have an Amiga back then. And I'm used to Commodore 64, and then I see this, and the graphics are so much more crisper. the sound, there's digitized speech in the games, and I'm looking at it and I thought, this is the next step. This is, you know, looking at Commodore 64 compared to Amiga, there's no comparison, you know, in that sense. And I think he had Defender of the Crown as well, which is like quite a benchmark sort of game for the Amiga to show off, you know. And then Star Wars, of course, he put that in, and it was arcade perfect. Still to this day, you look at the arcade version on MAME, you look at the Amiga version, they're pretty much similar. It's very difficult to distinguish between the two.
It was a huge leap from, you know, going 16-bit from the 8-bits, because it really did showcase that the console and computer generation were moving away, and slowly but surely the 8-bit machines were being left behind.
Yeah, and I think I sort of jumped ship a bit early because, well, not early, but slightly before everyone else, because this guy who had the Amiga was quite a rich kid, so he had all the latest stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And he was the first person I knew to have an Amiga, and everyone had Commodore 64s, and then you saw this, of course you're going to want it. But I remember they were 400 quid.
Yeah, and pricey.
I didn't have that, and I knew, moaning at my parents, that wouldn't get, and I was 16, go and get a job, go and go out and earn your own money, don't bother us, we're not paying 400 quid. I had to sell my Commodore 64, I had a Commodore 64, the disk drive, I had a printer, I had disk games, like probably about 30 disk games, originals, you know, I had a load of disc games with copies on, you know, I had unsold tape games, I had loads of proof. Basically, I had to sell that, and I think I sold it for about, I couldn't get, because this was like the last sort of knock-ins of the Commodore 64, it sort of fallen out of vogue a bit.
Yeah.
And I managed to sell that for 100 quid, and I thought that was a bloody liberty, selling that for 100 quid, but so I had this 100 pound, then I had to go work with my dad for about 6 months before I got anywhere near enough money to buy that Amiga.
Yeah, but I bet you must have appreciated it quite a lot when you first did get it. I mean, what were your impressions when you first took it home then? Were you like, yes, I finally got my Amiga? Or, you know,
well,
what went through your head?
It's something that's difficult to capture again, like all these years later, because now, because we've all got the internet, you can go straight onto any website. You can play Amiga games in your web browser. It's not a big deal anymore. But back then, these games were quite difficult to source, you know. You had to actually pay 25 quid for a time for these sort of things. So before I got it, I had my birthday was in between the time I got it, and people were saying, what do you want for your birthday? I'm saying, get me this Amiga game, get me that Amiga game. And they said, but you haven't got the computer yet. I'm saying, look, you just get it, because when I get it, I'll have all the... So of course I've got these three or four games stacked up, and I'm reading the instruction books backwards, because I'm just getting, God, when I get my Amiga, this is going to go straight inside of this, and I, you know.
Yeah.
And it was Three Stooges I had to buy, because that game really impressed me. Around about that time, Test Drive 2 came out.
Yeah.
Test Drive 2 and a game by Sierra called Manhunter in New York.
Right, no, I've not heard of that one.
Which is like a point and click, one of the early point and click sort of things.
Right.
And of course, the first day I actually got that Amiga, sat down and plugged into the TV, that was it. I was, you wouldn't see
what
me.
What Amiga was it? Sorry, was it the 500?
Yeah, 500.
Right. I don't know if I've mentioned it or if you know, Darren, but in episode 25, I'm basically going to announce the winner of my Amiga giveaway. So if any of our listeners are listening to this, head on over to the forum. There should be a little post on how you can actually win an Amiga 500 with a whole bunch of games, which was kindly donated by Swainy. Sorry, Darren, I just had to sort of quickly plug that little prize that I'm giving away.
No, I'll be interested in that myself, I think.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'll post something on the forum. Well, it should be there by the time this podcast has come out. And yeah, you could be in with a chance of actually winning some Amiga 500 with a whole bunch of games.
Excellent.
Hello, this is Potty Boy, and you're listening to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about your computer and console history. I just want to move on to something slightly different, because we'll be wrapping this podcast up in about, 10-15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a few simple little questions. What was your favourite arcade game?
I can only sort of base that on what I will still play today on MAME.
Right.
And the game I always go back to, and the game because I play it a lot, I'm pretty good at, is Mr. Do.
Mr. Do, right, okay. I've never heard anyone mention that. I know Mr. Do is very, very playable, but quite a lot of the time people give different answers to that. Why Mr. Doom?
Yeah, because that was the game down the local kebab shop, and when I was growing up, that was there, and that was the only arcade game I could really get regular access to because it was quite nearby. Pumped a lot of money into that and got pretty good at it. And as soon as MAME was around, where's Mr. Do? Have they got Mr. Do? So straight onto that. I mean, very difficult to narrow anything down. When someone says, "What's your favourite?" This, what's your favourite? Very difficult with retro gaming because there were so many. But I can only base it on what I still play today a lot, and that's Mr. Do.
Okay, then. So now these are like desert island games. Now, if you could play three games, well, I suppose Mr. Do would be on this list. Three games you could play forever. They can be on any system, any console.
That is so tough. Really. I'd have to say there's one for the Commodore 64 that I do play a lot, and I still think it's a masterpiece, and that's Raid Over Bungling Bay.
Right, okay. No, I've not played that one. Well, that sounds interesting. I'll have to check that one out on YouTube. Tell us a little bit about that game and why you like it so much, then.
It is, it's a helicopter game where you're looking down on the helicopter from above. Mm-hmm. You're on an aircraft carrier, and there's six or seven islands dotted around, and each island, well, not each island, but most of the islands have got factories on.
Right.
And your mission is to blow up these factories because they're making a battleship, and this battleship's going to come along and blow up your aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
So you've got to go around, and you'll fly over, and you'll see this factory. And incidentally, this game was made by the same guy who made SimCity.
Right, okay.
The original SimCity. So you can see the graphics are quite similar to like SimCity.
Yeah.
Anyway, you fly over, you turn up, and there's a few tanks about and stuff that are trying to shoot you down. Blow up this factory, go back to your aircraft carrier, refuel, get some more bombs, and then you go off again. And then people are smart here now. They see this helicopter coming over, so there's gun emplacements dotted around trying to shoot you down. Get the next factory, and you go back again, and then there's on one of the islands there's an airport with jet aircraft, so you get aircraft chasing you out. The third factory, then there's the gun emplacements with guided missiles, and so it goes on. It gets progressively harder. Eventually, when you, I think it's five factories you get, and once you deal with the five factories, you've won, and you get the ticker tape parade at the end. There's quite a good ending screen for it, but in the meantime, there's like a subplot. This battleship's being built, and if you've got to keep an eye on this battleship, you can bomb it and halt production of it. But if this battleship manages to get launched, it will come after your aircraft carrier. Of course, that's your last life. If you lose that aircraft carrier, you can't refuel, blah, blah, blah. And really good, like, arcadey sort of game.
That does sound absolutely fantastic. I'm actually really genuinely surprised that I've never actually heard or even played that. So I think I'm going to play that once we've done this podcast and play it on my little PSP.
Yeah.
Give it a go. So name the other two favourite games that you could only, you know, if you could play for the rest of your life, what would you play?
This is so difficult. Really unfair question, this is. Maybe it's a toss-up between, on the Amiga, this would be Wings by Cinemaware, or a game called Knights of the Sky by Microprose.
Right, so...
Which are both World War One flight simulators.
Yeah.
Wings is sort of more arcadey. Obviously, you know, you're a World War One pilot, you've got to do missions. There's the actual sort of flight simulator sort of mission where you actually see the horizon and you know your cockpit and all the rest of it. But then there's other sort of more arcadey missions where you have to strafe a convoy or do some a bombing raid and things like that. But it was quite good. The presentation was really, really good.
Yeah.
As all Cinemaware games were.
Right.
But you had, you know, the sort of storyline. There was like a journal, a pilot's journal, and he would explain what's going on in the rest of the war and all this sort of thing. But that was really good. But Knights of the Sky was different, but just as good in other ways, because it was a sort of sandbox version of that game where you could just sort of do what you like. But there were missions, and there was like a league table of who's the best ace of World War One, and then you'd get other pilots challenging you for a dogfight, and it was just as good, but not as arcadey. So I can't choose between them. So can I have both, please?
So will that be your three games then, or do you
want
one more?
I'll just settle with them three because I cannot. There's so many.
No problems. And it seems like you've chosen some fine games there. Like two of the games there, which I've really got to check out myself. Then, right. So the next question I got for you then is, what is your fave console ever? Or fave computer ever?
Probably the Commodore 64. Just for the. The amount of games for it, the playability of most of them, there's every sort of game you can imagine for that thing. And I know the Amiga.
You got a C64 now?
I have. I bought everything back off eBay and some.
Yeah.
So I've got all these stacked away. To be honest, I don't play them much because the emulator is just too easy to fire up, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just nice to have. Stuff, you know, it's all boxed and all mint and all the rest of it, and it's nice to. Well, I've got my Spectrum, I've got Commodore 64, I've got an Amiga, I've got an Amiga 1200.
Yeah,
I've got Atari 2600. That's all boxed. I've got loads of cartridges for that. I bought an Intellivision as well, which one of my mates had back then.
Fantastic. I've got another quick question. Now you've mentioned some of these consoles that you've got. Now, I don't know if you're in the same sort of situation as me, because I find the older I get, the less time I have time to actually play these games. Now, it makes my time playing these games, like, really cherish them, but I do wish I had more time. Do you find yourself in that same situation?
It's just when you get older, you get married, you have kids, you've got to go to work, there's a lot less time for everything, really. But it's just nice to have them. I mean, I collect Spectrum games. I never play them on the actual real unemulated Spectrum games. I never play them. I've just liked to have the collection of tapes. I love the artwork of them.
Yeah.
I love the bits and pieces you got with the boxes, you know, like Rockstar Ate My Ham, so you did a thing on that.
Yeah.
And I've got that with the newspaper and the badges and, you know, the bits and pieces. Just like all that packing stuff you used to get with this stuff. And they're very collectible, you know, just for the artwork and just to have them all nicely set up on a shelf somewhere. Never play them though, but like I say, if I do tend to play stuff, it's always on an emulator now. But just nice to have stuff, isn't it?
It's a lot easier, I think. It's the same thing with me. I've got all my old machines up in the loft now because, you know, like, it's just I haven't got enough room for all these things. So emulation is absolutely perfect. And maybe from time to time, I might take these things out. Okay, I've got another couple of questions for you before we round this up.
Okay.
What is your worst game ever, a WTF game? A game that you think is so bad. I mean, it doesn't matter if other people like this game, but a game that you personally just hate with a vengeance. And if you tell us why you hate this game and why this is WTF.
I'm going to think of loads of these when this conversation's over, I bet you. But I just remember two instances where I actually paid good money for a game and it was terrible. And one of them was when I first got my Spectrum, there was I wanted a version of Frogger.
Right.
Because that was like the big game at the time. And I saw, went into Smith's and found this game and I paid £5 or whatever it was for it. Yeah. Got it home and it was terrible. And it's a game called Frogger by C-Tech Software. And if you find it on your emulator somewhere, it is just awful. And I even then, and I was quite hungry for any sort of gaming, I couldn't hack it. And I think I went back and tried to get my money back for it at one point.
Did you?
Well,
did it work? Did you get your money back?
No, because they said, unless it's broken. I stupidly said, they said, does it work? And I said, yeah, it works. But I just, and of course, that was it, you know. Well, you've paid for it.
Oh, well.
And I think
you should have gone back, you know, a couple of days later.
Well, I was a kid. I didn't have any mouth on me. I was just like, you know, all right. So, there was another one called Break. I think it was called Breakthrough. I got on the Commodore 64. It was an arcade game.
No, I don't know that one. Is it kind of like Android or?
No. You're a military sort of like Humvee sort of thing, and you're
right. Okay.
You're going around shooting people on this road, and you've got to get through to this island, and there's all different levels. But the arcade version was pretty good. I played the arcade version back then. Of course.
What was so terrible about this version then? Was it just the poor conversion? I mean, what were the bad points of it?
It just looked like it was rushed. The bullets that you fired out of your thing were as big as the, you find out if your vehicle were as big as a vehicle. That didn't look right. And it just looked like they just got this license, thought, right, we've got the license for breakthrough. Who's going to do it? Someone put their hand up. Right, you've got 2 weeks, get on with it. And then they released it. And it was just, it was terrible, you know. Still,
it's, that's the way it pretty much worked back in the day, especially for arcade conversions. You know, they were under timescales, programs were given limited times, and I think games that weren't to do with arcade conversions, I think the programmers could spend a little bit more time because it wasn't a deadline or anything. Well, that's what I think anyway.
Yeah, I think that's where the industry maybe has gone a bit wrong. But all these, in the early days when the Spectrum first came out, and you had sort of this punk rock gaming, you know, what I mean by that is people would just have a go, you know, you get these bedroom programmers, and there would be no sort of time constraints, there would be no, they were just doing it on their own, and they'd make the game they wanted to make without any sort of focus groups telling them, you can't do this, you can't do that. And
well, it's like what happened with Matthew Smith, you know, the first game, Manic Miner, he did it in his own time, placed it, and then the second one, Jet Set Willy, he was given a time limit, and he definitely felt the pressure. And because he felt the pressure, the game came out and it had loads of bugs here and there. And
yeah,
people think it's not quite as good.
I think the company, was it Software Projects? I think they got a bit overambitious. They thought, we've got the hot game, let's make the sequel. And even if the sequel wasn't ready, they just wanted to get a sequel out, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I think I've heard Matthew Smith in an interview say that it wasn't quite the way he wanted it. And like you say, there was bugs. You couldn't complete it, the first versions that came out. That bug. You couldn't actually complete the game.
Right, I've got two more questions for you, and then we'll round the show up.
Okay.
Now, the next thing I want to find out is, how on earth did you get back into retro gaming?
It was basically eBay, I'll have to say. It's probably about the year... that wasn't all of my consoles what we was talking about, because there was the PS2, which I got about sort of 2001.
Yeah.
So I bought that. That sort of got me into gaming again, and a few people had PCs back then. And there was like the early PC games like X-Wing and TIE Fighter and things like that. Mm-hmm. Got me into that back again. And I started thinking, well, maybe I'm going to get a PC. So I couldn't really afford a PC at the time. It was, you know, best part of £600-700 for a half decent one. But as soon as I got one and got an internet connection, that was it. I'm trying to find all these old games again on eBay. Just seeing if, I wonder if anyone's got a Spectrum for sale or Commodore 64 for sale. And of course, there's loads of them and all the games. And that was it. I just started buying it all back again. All the stuff I'd sold and given away over the past years. And thought, you know, I'd have a good old play of a Commodore 64 again. And then, of course, emulation came out. Well, emulation, I got into emulation. And I thought, well, I don't really need all this stuff, you know, I've bought. But it just... I thought, I don't want to get rid of it, you know. It's I love having the games, I love having the boxes and stuff. So a lot of it's gone straight back up in the loft. It's nice to have, you know.
Oh no, definitely. Is there any computer or console that you haven't got that you would love to get, you know, and get your hands on?
I don't know. Back then I was pretty much a computer guy, so I wasn't, when the Nintendo stuff was coming out and the Mega Drive and things like that, I wasn't into it. And mainly the reason why I wasn't into it, I loved the games, the games looked great and all the rest of it, but I just thought, you can't copy games. And that, it might be a sort of selfish thing to think, but you can't copy these games. I've got to pay 25, 30 quid at a time every time I want to play, you know, whatever. If I've got a computer, then a bloke can do me a disc, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that sort of turned me off going through all these consoles. So I'd never really wanted a console back then until sort of 2001 when I got my PS2, and I sort of thought, well, I've got to get one of these. They are great, and they still are, you know.
Speaking about PS2s, actually, I thought I'd just tell you a little bit of news that actually what my brother phoned me up today. He went to a car boot sale. He got himself a PS2 with over 20 games. Guess how much he paid for it?
It's probably going to be about £5 or something.
It was £10, actually.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
£10, and I'm just thinking he's got like GTA, Manhunt, and all these other sort of games, which... And I think the first thing he's going to do is put it on eBay. But
that's a shame.
I'll tell you what we're going to start doing then. We'll start wrapping this podcast up. I've got one final question for you, and then I'll ask you if you've got any shout-outs or anything. Now, before we close up the show, I want to sort of have a retro gaming tune that you love that we can play out the show with. What tune would you go for?
It'd have to be that tune that blew me away back then. It was Forbidden Forest.
Forbidden Forest, okay. Let's write this down so that way I don't forget to include it.
If it's not that, if you can't find that, then it's Aztec Challenge, but it's one of them two. It's got to be.
Actually, those are two of my favourites, actually, so I'll definitely look for that. I'll look for Forbidden Forest, actually, because I thought that added loads of atmosphere to a fantastic game.
Yeah,
right,
definitely.
So have you got any thank yous or any shout-outs you'd like to say to anyone or plug anyone's website or anything?
Not really. I'm just doing this freelance, you know. I'm just here. I love the forum. I love what you're doing and the podcast, and keep up the good work. And everyone on the forums, a big up to you for making the forum successful.
And Darren, I'd like to say thank you as well for actually agreeing to do this. You know, I mean, I quite enjoy sort of like speaking to people about retro games, and I know like me, Swainy and Glenn, we're all recording these podcasts, and I thought it's time for our community members to actually have their say, basically. So, and I've really enjoyed doing this, actually.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So yeah, thank you very much, Darren, and we shall see you guys next time for episode 22.